The threat to New Zealand surf lifesaving clubs as severe weather events and coastal erosion forces them to beat a retreat. Paikakariki Surf Lifesaving Club on the Kapiti Coast north of Wellington is set to rebuild its clubhouse 100 metres inland to the tune of $3 million. The dunes there are eroding. Its boat launching ramp collapsed recently when sand was clawed out from underneath in winter storms. Other clubs in similar positions right around the country report they could be spending the money on equipment to save lives, or are wondering how long they're going to be able to stay put. Surf Life Saving New Zealand National Life Saving Manager Alan Mundy says some clubs might have to close rather than face the cost of moving facilities back from the beach. Also says this issue needed to be tackled 20 years ago. Meanwhile, salt-resistant dune planting has proven to be cost-effective as a method for offsetting beach erosion in the Bay of Plenty. The beach there is accreting following a successful dune restoration project. Our guests this morning are ecologist and beach restoration specialist Dr. Greg Jenks, who led the dune restoration project between Mount Maunganui and Papamoa, Matt Warren, who's leading the project to relocate Paikakariki's clubhouse, and also National Surf Lifesaving Manager Alan Mundy. Ata mare, kia ora. Good morning to all of you.
Kia ora.
Good morning. Kia ora.
Alan, I might start with you, because this is a complex picture. It's not the same right around the country. What is it that the different clubs are facing?
Well, what the clubs are facing is obviously with sea level rise, the increase in storm surges, their environments are just not able to sustain the impact of those factors with regards to keeping good amounts of sand around the surf clubs. Obviously, surf clubs are very, very popular places on the beaches. That's why they're there. And with the human impact, we're starting to see some of the sustainability of those environments start to fall away. And that's a real concern for us.
How much of this is also climate change in terms of the weather events, the severity of the weather events, and the numbers of times that you're seeing what used to be called once in 100 year events?
Well, I'd put it down to mainly that, is that, you know, when Cyclone Trina came along, it was a once in a 10 year event, and then a couple of years after that, we had three of them in the same year. And it's those extreme events and the frequency which is not allowing the environment to actually regenerate itself. So what we need to do is to look at what around the country is working. And we've got a really good example in the Bay of Plenty along a large stretch of coast, which is a high surf environment, high population, all of those factors which seem to create challenges for those dune plants or the dunes to sustain themselves, and yet it's thriving. And if we look at areas around the country where the environment isn't being sustained, the big thing that's missing are those native plants and a good dune restoration program.
And we'll be hearing more about that from Greg Jenks shortly on that. But I guess, talk to me a little bit about how this is experienced around the country. Clearly a huge amount of coastline, but very different pressures coming as well for East Coast, West Coast as well, because sea level rise, essentially, it's not being experienced in a kind of equal fashion. Why is that?
Well, if we look at what's on the dunes that's holding the sand, what you'll see is along the east coast, one of the things that's disappeared are the Mariam dunes. And, you know, back in the early, you know, 20s and 30s, a lot of those dunes, whether it be east and west coast, were grazed by farmers. And the plant of choice was Mariam grass because it was relatively tolerant in that environment with regards to being able to grow in sand. It isn't salt tolerant, though. So once it gets to the edge of the beach profile, the high salinity from the mist, from the surf, and even the high tides kills that Mariam off. But it's very aggressive, and it tends to overgrow the native plants. Now, Mariam grass, it grows a dune profile up. And if you have a look at places like Sumner, where it's still very prevalent, west coast of the North Island, Manawatu, you know, you've got these massive high dunes because the Mariam grass is still evident. Now, if you have a look at the Mount Maunganui profile, there's a high number of native plants, and the councils and the dune care programs And volunteers have been actively getting rid of the likes of the marine grass. So the dune profile isn't really high. It actually goes out towards the sea, which makes a much better beach to swim on as well, because it looks a lot more pristine. Now, those are the biggest differences. The sea level rise is affecting both the east and the west coast the same. So we've got to take our vision away from the sea and thinking that it's different on either side of the coast. It's actually on land, which is where the problem starts to begin.
So for certain areas of the country, perhaps which ones are some of the worst affected in terms of areas of beach that have been lost?
Well, we've got Sunset Beach is probably the worst at the moment, which is on the northwest coast, just north of Waikato, or Port Waikato. And they are looking at a major retreat, just like Matt's club is, and the cost of that retreat, it's not just the surf club, we're talking a community hall, a rugby ground, and it's around about collectively $4 to $5 million worth that they're now having to spend. And it's a small community, that's a lot of money for a small community, but that's what they're deciding to do. Now our concern is Surf Life Saving has been around for 110 years. And our clubs are all built, most of them, in the 60s and 70s. Now, if we were to look at an overall retreatment program within our organisation, we simply couldn't afford to do that.
The amount of money involved, like you're saying, it's huge. But I guess there do have to be solutions, and some buildings are going to have to be relocated. But that puts clubs in a pretty invidious position where they're having to make choices about how they spend their money.
Well, it does. And also, we are at the mercy of the councils, because that restoration that we're talking about at Sunset Beach, the Waikato District Council stumped up and said, well, this is what we're going to do for you. Now, if you put that into a national perspective, there will be councils who will just say, we just simply can't afford to do that. Now, our experience with the Christchurch rebuild was very much along those lines, and the surf clubs there, a lot of them were severely damaged and are still yet to be fixed, because there were a lot higher priorities within that community to actually, with the rebuild. Now, if we look at a coastal perspective around the whole of the country, there will be councils which will prioritise different for surf life saving. We won't be the top of the list, and we can sometimes understand that, but that means a net loss. I think one of the things that we'd like the readers to know is, so back in 2016, Search and Rescue New Zealand did a major study on recreation in the country. And what came out of that was 69% of all New Zealanders recreated at a beach in that year. So that's at least one visitation. We know lots of people go a lot more. So it's a major part of New Zealand's culture, is that beach community, because we've got some great beach communities. So it's not just impacting on surf lifesaving, it's going to impact on who we are and how we recreate.
Matt Warren, let's bring you in at this point. You're from the Paikakariki Surf Club, and you've taken the decision that you're going to have to move the building. Why was it that you had to make that decision and you got to that point?
It was a variety of things. I mean, the building is in 60-odd years old, so it's coming to the end of its life. It's been a project we've been working on for the last 5 years. And, just having a look at what's happening up and down the coast, we've been working proactively with the council, Greater Wellington Regional Council, to see what we do. They've got a major retreatment plan, and so all the reports that we got were saying, well, in 50 years' time, the bit of land we're on is probably not going to be there in the shape or form that it is, and we should move back.
Did you want to keep it where it was, though?
We'd love to keep it where it was. That'd be great, because the view of the beach, the way we lifeguard is really important. Moving it back 100 metres means going behind a sand dune, which means we have to change the way we do business, really.
You had a situation, though, recently with the boat ramp. Tell us a little bit about that, and I guess how that perhaps drove it home to you.
Yeah, the boat ramp is something that we've probably had there for the last 50 years. And what happened was we've had the severe weather events, and that's just undermined all the sand around and underneath the ramp, and the whole ramp, being a concrete ramp, eventually collapsed.
So I guess you kind of it shows you in a really real world sort of situation the sort of pressures you're facing.
Yeah, it is. It's really vivid. And I mean, our sand dune, we've lost about 10 metres of sand in the last 2 years, and it's created about a 2 metre bank that we now are right in front of the surf club that used to be a gentle dune going down onto the beach. So it is having an impact.
And are you having to do further kinds of planting to make sure that the dunes you've still got are kept for as long as possible?
We've been trying that for years, and yeah, there's been a lot of planting projects that have happened. Some pieces have worked well. I think another pressure that's been put on that is there's been the Kapiti Coast District Council have put up a lot of stone walls and walls along the place, which whether that's having an effect on our part of the park, because the Greater Wellington Regional Council have decided they're not going to put up the walls and let erosion take place. So it's two different trains of thought within 100 metres of beach.
Yeah, what do you make of that? Would it be easier, better from your position to have a consistent approach?
It would be, but you've got to have a look at the amount of resource that goes into some of those. I mean, there's continual work going on the Kapiti Coast to keep those walls maintained, and you're never going to beat Mother Nature, so you've just got to keep persisting, really.
So rebuilding the clubhouse, tell me a little bit about how that works, where you're going to put it, what sort of facilities you're going to be able to provide, and how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, well, first of all, the cost is going to be $2.5 to $3 million, which we still don't know whether we can do that or not. So that is the biggest question, is whether we're going to be able to raise that kind of money. If we can't, then I don't know what we'll do as a club, because we won't be able to provide the services that we can provide.
And what do you do at the moment? What sort of services are on offer?
Oh, what we've got is, it's more of a community place that we've got. So the clubhouse is used primarily as a lifeguarding station. And then after that, we've got all of our club activities that happen. Plus, we have a lot of community groups. We have some weddings that come in. I mean, we have the local table tennis club that comes and uses the building. So it is a community facility. The change will be, we'll be trying to make that more of a community facility, because we don't want to build something that's empty more than it's full. So that's
Absolutely.
The aim.
Absolutely. Dr. Greg Jenks, ecologist and beach restoration specialist, if we can talk to you about the project that you've been involved in, dune restoration between Mount Maunganui and Papamoa. What did you start off with, and what have you been able to achieve?
Good morning. Yes, just one small correction. I don't hold a doctorate. I'm a mere Mr. Greg Jenks, so I'll clear that up. Yeah, sorry about that. Restoration, yes. We've been undertaking restoration here in the Bay of Pinio for 25 years now. In fact, we're just about to have our 25th anniversary next Sunday here in Mount Maunganui. But we've been undertaking this work not only on the Mount Maunganui to Papamoa beaches, but throughout the whole of the Bay of Pindi region, from Waihi Beach down south to the beaches east of Aporiki. So it's a range of mostly sandy beaches, but down near Aporiki there's one shingle beach involved there. So this has been going for a long time. We've learnt a lot of the science input that was required for successful restoration, and we've found that all the beaches we have been restoring with these native New Zealand native halophyte salt tolerant beach plants have progressed very nicely, much to the alarm of some coastal scientists. They can't quite put their heads around it. We've had accretion of 30 to 40, maybe 50 metres along the Mount Maunganui and Papamoa beaches, but also one extreme example of over 100 metres accretion of accumulation of sand, like New June, that's been created down in Hewa Harbour, which is really impacted very heavily in 1968 by the Wahine storm.
So, and all of this is, you say this is all down to planting specifically salt-tolerant plants,
yes.
and that has held everything together?
That's correct. Well, it doesn't only hold things together. The difference between the salt-tolerant plants and the non-salt-tolerant plants, like kaikuyu and marum, as Alan mentioned, and any other plant that was imported to New Zealand after Linda Cocaine wrote his report to Parliament in 1911 of the coastal erosion problems that were occurring back then in New Zealand. All these invasive plants were introduced to New Zealand to try and stop erosion. This, you know, we're talking about 100 years ago. But none of those species were salt tolerant. So we've been having this problem ever since that time. So it's nothing new. It's been going on for over 100 years. And no one had used the native plants because no one knew how to propagate them. We helped to establish a nursery down in Whakatāne with a young lady down there who was pivotally involved in this work and who had already done some early work on these plants. And together with her and the subsequent owners of that nursery, we put together a program which would produce the best possible plants in the best possible condition to place back into these sand dunes.
So being able to plant close to the sea, that helps to protect the land, and that must be one of the most cost-effective solutions that we have.
Well, it is, actually. It's been proved by being cited by the IPCC back in the 2007 Fourth Assessment Report, where our numbers were quoted by the IPCC as costing for dune restoration about 1% to 2% of the cost of building seawalls. So you imagine it's as cheap as chips in some respects. So something this should be happening more and more around the coast. Not only have we been doing this work on the east coast, we've been doing some work on the west coast as well, and down the South Island at Tahunanui Beach in Nelson. And all of those sites have shown the same sort of effects. These native plants that are salt tolerant grow naturally in that environment. They have done for millennia before people even arrived in New Zealand. There was no problems at all in this country with coastal erosion previously. It was the impact of people in the country that led to these problems and led to Linda Cocaine writing his report in 1911 saying that about 120,000 hectares of sand dunes in that time had been degraded and had become destabilised by human activity. And that's quite a troubling number, really, because we only have 129,000 hectares of dunes in New Zealand. So in 1911, 95% of our dune lands were already eroding.
Mm. Look, thank you very much for your time, all of you. Greg Jenks, there we were speaking to an ecologist and beach restoration specialist. Also spoke to Matt Warren from Paikakariki Surf Club and also the National Surf Life Saving Manager, Alan Mundy. Thank you all very much for your time this morning on RNZ National.